Hi, I'm Bob Acton, the host of the Color and Ceramics podcast. Today, I'm joined by Brooklyn-based ceramic artist Kyle Scott Lee, known for his bold use of color, expressive brushwork, and inventive surface treatments. Kyle's work bridges tradition and innovation. Over the past two decades, he's developed a distinctive style, combining classic vessel forms with vibrant abstract design. His ceramics have been exhibited internationally, featured in major publications, and really collected across the globe. Kyle is a founding member of Brooklyn Clay, teaches at Gasworks New York City, and currently collaborates with brands like West Elm, bringing his dynamic vision to a wide audience.
Kyle, thank you so much for being here today on the Color and Ceramics podcast. I am pumped to have you because, of course, as I said, this is the Color and Ceramics podcast, and you are a man all about color that I can
I'm
see.
all about color, that's right.
Hey, so welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Hey, Kyle, could you tell our audience a little bit about your work? You're based in New York and quite involved with the ceramics community there. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey in clay and sort of what where you started and what got you here.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Well, I originally started as a painter and went to school in DC as a painter. And I always walked by the ceramics program there and never touched clay. It was really about acrylic on canvas for me back then. And but I always knew, I've always felt that clay was a medium that I should be a part of. Fast forward many, many years, and I also, by the way, have an IT job. I have a day job. I work as an IT director for a healthcare company here in New York City. And, there was a time when I came to New York that I took a job with Bloomberg, and it was just insanely stressful. So I decided I needed to vent that stress in some direction, and I thought about clay. There just happened to be a studio around the corner from me. And so I decided, yeah, why not? I've been thinking about it all these years. Why not give it a shot? And went in, tried it, loved it, never stopped.
You got the
And that was
bug.
probably about 20 plus years ago.
Very cool. Very cool.
And so I kept doing it and kept working at it and learned more about the process and the technical aspects of clay and ceramics. And I then at that same studio became a technician. Then I became the studio manager, and I really just, learned and traveled through different, trying different. I'm very experimental, so I love trying different techniques. Always reading. All my books are all ceramic books. They used to be all IT books, but now they're all ceramic books.
Enough of that IT stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish it was enough. I'm still doing it today, but it's remote.
Yeah.
So I do it out of my studio.
Well, I think often that's true for artists, isn't it? That to make a living as an artist is a real challenge. And so
Yes.
many artists have two things going. They have their art, and then they have their money-making piece on the other side of the equation,
Right.
to help pay the rent.
Yeah. So I traveled through multiple studios. I had to move because you need to see what other people are doing. And so I moved to a different studio in Manhattan, got to see what people were doing there. It was very exciting because I was in my younger years of clay, and so I needed to see have that inspiration. of what other people were doing out there. And then I started taking workshops and had my first sale when I was there, and I sold out, and it felt really good. So it took me a while to really get the business going, but I ultimately, during COVID, partnered with West Elm and worked with them for probably about 7 years. And just recently stopped working with them. I won't go into why, but they're corporate, so I just had enough of that. Doing a wholesale thing now that I'm trying out. But predominantly I love doing markets and sales, like traveling and teaching workshops, and that's really my favorite thing to do now,
Very cool.
and share.
You sound like an experimental guy. Like you like experimenting. You experiment with colors and techniques and business
Yes.
strategies and marketing tools and that's where you're in your element, it sounds like.
Yeah, that is in my element. If there's a technology involved in what I'm doing with clay, I am over the moon.
Very
Yeah,
nice.
so
Very, yeah.
the so I used to use wax resist to do my designs and everything like that. And then I did a workshop or residency at Watershed up in Maine. And somebody brought a vinyl cutter with them, and I had been looking for a way to freshen up my work and make my designs more crisp and clean, and that vinyl cutter, soon as I saw it, I was on Amazon, placed the order, and that's what I'm doing today.
Very cool. Hey, I wonder, like this is an audio podcast, so people are having to imagine what your work is like. It's not video. And we kind of did that intentionally to provoke people's imagination and get them to come and look at your work later on your Instagram and websites, which we'll post up on our stuff for people to find you. But could you describe your work? Like, what is it? What does it look like? What are you trying to achieve with it?
So it's, I want to, I'm not the most technical ceramic artist. I'm predominantly on the wheel. I do like altering my work sometimes, but a lot of it is just wheel thrown. I love adding color and design on my pieces, and so I spray. I use underglazes, and I spray those underglazes on to get a nice gradient color or group of colors on. Whether they're, warmer or cooler, I'll use a blue, greens, yellows to achieve cooler versions of what I'm doing, or reds and pinks and oranges to get, a more exciting, warmer version of those pieces. I can't really show you.
Yeah. Well,
But
of course, I've looked at some of your work online. That's how we found you. And so you have kind of what I might call an abstract design on your work, which might be a big vase, for example. I can see some behind you right now. And so you have this abstract approach to the design, the surface design. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what are you trying to achieve with that abstract look?
Sure. It's just, the abs I have actually two kind of bodies of work. I have an abstract side that is more painterly. It comes from my history of being a painter. And then I have the more design side, which I use for markets and the abstract side is more of the gallery work that I do. So, and most of that is hand thrown. The design work, because it's production, almost borderline production, that it's I slip cast a lot too. But those original pieces are pieces that I've thrown in the past. So yeah, I mean, I have this abstract side that's from my painting background. I'm really influenced by Basquiat and the outlines that he likes to put around his color and the images that he has on his work. So I really am inspired by that. But also, I can be very simplistic in my work too, and just have, a black and white vase with a red stripe down the center. And it's just very bold, very very modern. And that people love those as well. And I like those. Those are eye catchers, but they're more of the production side of my work.
Okay, so you've described two sides to your work. One is more a focus towards galleries, and I might call that more artistic. And the other side is more commercial, maybe, where you're trying to sell volumes of work. And but both have a contemporary look to them.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
Definitely.
like why is it that you've separated those two? You've got the gallery over here, and you've got the markets and so on over here. How do you think about that?
For the gallery side, I really pull out my artistic, background. I want them to be different than the production stuff. And it's really I it's all handmade. And I don't want to be so repetitive in my art, in my gallery work. I can be repetitive in the design work because that's going out to retail shops. But I really want to have my I want to keep my artistic sensibility when I'm doing the abstract work that I do.
It's beautiful, and one of the things that struck me was that there was sometimes something very abstract, yet at another time there might be a piece that had repetitive images on it. I'm thinking of a piece that had sort of repetitive little elongated squares and some images in there. So tell us a little bit how you think about that, how you approach
Well,
the
I you
two.
know what? I actually fall into the middle with some of those. I do the I take some aspects of the design work and I incorporate them into the gallery work. And so it's kind of an overlap between the two, but still I'm painting color on and not spraying color on when I'm doing them, because that painting gives you the layers and the color overlapping and color blocking abilities that I really find interesting.
Now you've incorporated this vinyl cutter to help you with some shapes, right?
Yes,
So
yes.
tell us a little bit about that. I bet you a number of people who are listening have never either heard of a vinyl cutter or are certainly not used one. Could you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it's a noisy little printer like machine. And I'm sure the others in my studio here are sick and tired of hearing about it or hearing it printing. But it's a great little tool. I use it as a resist mechanism, as a resist process or technique. And like I said, I used to use wax resist. But now my shapes are crisper, the lines are cleaner, and not as organic as they used to be, which is something I was looking to do.
For sure.
So I again found this vinyl cutter at a residency, and it really kind of uplifted my work a little bit more that I was trying to improve and clean up my work some.
So the process is you cut a piece of vinyl, or the machine cuts a piece of vinyl, and then you lay it on your bisque or leather hard work.
On this work, yes.
Okay. And then spray or paint over top of it and then remove it to leave where you might have used wax, for example.
Well, here's the process. I will spray color on or paint color on. What I do, just like a painter gessos their canvas, I will spray every single piece with white underglaze
Okay.
to give it that gessoed kind of feel. And then also that white underglaze underneath the color will help the color pop. So I'll spray the color on greenware, and then I fire it in the kiln.
Okay.
So that and that is because it bakes in. And so if I do anything outside of, outside of that color application, I don't lose it. It's baked on. I can never damage it, unless I did it up front. And then I put the vinyl on in different shapes. I can use leaves. I can use mid-century modern type shapes and ovals. I use a lot of ovals. They fit nicely on curved vases. Circles. I do like these like Art Deco almost like bubble type of designs. And I make a version of things that I think that people will use, cups, wine cups. I have some new, I'm making candles now, some cocktail cups, some, thrown lidded boxes and vases, plates, dinnerware, stuff like that. It's the designs are just, they take me some time to find the right design
Yeah, of
to
course.
cut on the vinyl. But once it's there, I then experiment even further with it and try to expand on it.
Very cool. Now, are the vinyl pieces reusable?
No. So
Oh, okay.
once I put the vinyl on and I spray the piece with the top color,
Yeah.
those vinyl pieces come off after I've sprayed the final color. Or I will wax around the vinyl. Say if it's a circle, I will wax around that vinyl circle, peel the vinyl off, and then color in that circle. And it's protected everywhere else because
Sure.
it's waxed around it.
Very cool. Now, I bet you are a great teacher because here I am chatting with you and I'm leaning forward asking you questions about your techniques. Do you teach?
Yes, I do.
Oh, so tell us a little bit about your teaching and what you enjoy the most about it.
Yeah. Oh, I love teaching. So I teach twice a week at a studio here in Brooklyn called Gasworks NYC. I have some amazing students, and I love sharing. I love sharing about clay and about process and other artists that are out there. And people just I just love sharing everything about it. So when I'm teaching, I show them, I do the demos, and I love giving instruction. And the best thing in the world is when a student is struggling and you tell them, try this, tell you move your hand this way, or sturdy your body a little bit more, and they have this aha moment, I call it. And all of a sudden they've got it. And that is just so joyful, for me to have that moment. And then you have the students that you don't ever have that moment with. They're a little tougher. I've had students that can't come to terms with the concept of something spinning in front of them. They, you know, it's really interesting to see how different people react to the wheel. And I find it very interesting when people have what I call potter's head. Do you know what that is?
No, I've never heard of that.
So, do you know when somebody's sitting at the wheel and their head is spinning
Yes, yeah. With
with
the
the wheel?
wheel.
I
Yeah.
call it potter's head.
Yeah, okay.
And I just find that so interesting that they follow the
Yeah.
rotation with their head.
And now, do you think that they produce pretty good work, or is that a sign of somebody challenging with the spatial components of the thing?
I think it's a sign that they're challenged, but I have had people that students that do really well at the wheel, and they still have that. I do have students that don't do really well, and they don't do that. You know, there's a muscle memory that comes with
Yeah.
sitting at the wheel and throwing with clay, and some people just don't have that, you know, sensibility about it. But most people get through, you know, and I have most of my students are repeat return students. So every year or every term, you know, I'll go back and say, hey, do you need to, you know, go over making bowls again? And you know, so ultimately they get better and better and better.
Yeah. You need to have that process in place where people are on a journey out there to get better
Right.
rather than trying to make something complete right here today, right? That makes such a difference.
Yeah. And I know when I was taking classes, I was really appreciative of the challenge that the teacher I had really, he put forth. Like, I was throwing vases, and the vases, every time I got to the middle, I would throw them too thin and they would collapse on themselves. And almost like the mad potter type of, you know, collapse where it folded in on itself. So I decided I'm going to take the rest of it and I'm going to just straighten it up and throw a neck on top. And this was going to be a body of work. And so my teacher was like, keep going with that, keep going with it. And told me about the mad potter, you know, and the history and this, and everything. And that's what I like to teach that way myself. That's the way I learned. That's kind of how I teach.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, never give up. I'm telling them,
Yeah.
never give up
And
on it.
have somebody like you with giving them continual reinforcement and patting them on the back. I mean, to me, that's really, really important as well.
Yeah, I like doing that, even if they're doing horribly. There is an aspect of, you know, positive I don't know, I can't remember what I'm trying to say.
Feedback, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, positive feedback.
Yeah.
And it feels good. It felt good to me. I'm sure it feels good to them.
Absolutely. Hey,
Yeah.
now, I bet you in your journey, you've encountered a challenge of some sort that was hard to get over. What could you, I'm guessing, because we all have them, what is a challenge that you had that you overcame?
So, this is going to sound completely silly, but I've had a challenge, and I still have that challenge.
Yeah.
Personally, it's with handles, making handles. I have a handle phobia, if you will. You know? I have tried and tried and tried, and it takes a lot of practice. And I have to admit, I haven't practiced it to the point where I've gotten good at it. I can teach it, I can show the basics, but I'm not good at it. And it just it's yeah, that's a challenge of mine.
Pulling handles is a challenge, is it? It's
Yeah.
a it's an art, but I guess, like you mentioned earlier, it's muscle memory in some ways, right? That
Yeah,
you get
yeah.
into it and you're not even thinking about it so much. You're just doing it.
Very true.
You
Yeah.
know,
Yeah.
I like sports, so I often will watch a sports program or something, and they'll interview top athlete after the game is over. And the announcers are asking the person, well, why did you do that? And how did that happen? And what did you notice when you did this? And really, the answers are really mundane and silly because they can't remember because it was so automatic for them
Right,
that out there
right.
thinking. And I think art is similar to that in some ways, in that you get into the process of doing it, like making handles, you'd stop thinking about it after a while.
Right. It becomes part of ingrained in your process.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like centering some mud on the wheel. You know,
Right.
the first time we did that, it ended up on the floor. And so that's great. Now, I always ask everybody what advice they might give to an up-and-coming potter or sculptor or somebody working in clay. What advice might you have for somebody who's taking that approach?
So, I really it's that's a two-part question actually. So when somebody's up and coming, I usually tell them, just make bowls right now. Just make a ton of bowls and you'll get really good at making bowls. So be a little repetitive. I made vases probably for 10 years straight, and maybe once in a while I threw a plate. Once in a while I threw a cup, but it was vases straight. And that is the shape that I can throw with my eyes closed. And we were talking about muscle memory. It's there completely.
For sure.
And then I woke up one day and I said, you know what? I don't even know how to make a plate really. So let me start throwing other shapes, and then I practice those, and then I can kind of make almost any shape, maybe not good, but I find it difficult in the classes that I teach to teach people like things like teapots that are multiple parts. And it's a difficult thing to teach in a public studio. And I'm not an expert at it by all means. I do like them a little bit, but it's not on the top of my list of things.
So muscle memory, practice, practice, and practice some more, making the same thing, whatever that is,
Yes.
until you really understand deeply. Not just the muscle memory, but the design factors, the thickness, the technical components, the clay you're using, all of those pieces that go
All those
together.
pieces.
And so that's one bit of advice is to make lots of the same thing. And once you've got
Yeah.
that down, start on something else. Great advice.
Exactly.
But you said that was
Exactly.
a two-part question.
It is a two-part question. So there is, once you have kind of established and you've been making pieces for a while and you want to get into selling your work, I also give advice on that to those people that are just starting doing their first sale or really come up to me and say, Kyle, I don't know how to price my work. And so I will sit with them and kind of coach them into what I've learned over a period of time, and that is know where you're selling. Know what type of venue. Is it a little holiday sale that you're doing because people are really just looking for gifts for the holidays? Or is it a large scale, more visibility type of sale? Bring the prices up a little bit. Is it a gallery? Maybe double the prices. It just depends on the time of the year, on the economy. It depends on a lot. There's a lot of variables there. If I do that in the public studio, and people will come up and ask me, how do I price my stuff? And I said, just make smaller stuff. You don't have to be grand about it. People are going to buy smaller pieces. Blue's a hot seller,
No kidding, yeah.
and just kind of, try to help them along and allow them to bring their work into their first sale, sell some of their work, and have a really positive experience.
You bet. Yeah, I think that's true. I remember listening to somebody talk about how you need to have three levels of pricing at an art show. And this person was primarily talking about painters, but I think it fits for ceramic as well. And his idea was that you should always have some pieces over $1,000, because many people out there would never pay under $1,000. And so you need a couple of those, and you need a lot of things between 100 and 1,000. And but you do need lots under 100, because lots of people can't afford things over 100. And so I certainly found that in my sales, is you got to have a little bit of everything.
I had a market, a holiday market. I think it might have been 2 years ago, and I had, cups and vases and bowls and, all the things. And I had a person come in and said, "You know what? I don't see anything here that I really like. Can you take me up?" It was in my studio building. "Can you take me up to your studio and can I see what you have in your studio?" I brought her up to my studio. She picked the most expensive vase that I had here and purchased it. And I said, "Well, it's going to cost this much. I don't care." And she was buying it as a gift, not even for herself.
No, I think it's important for us artists to be able to tap into the business side of things, because those are all business ideas, right? That we need to be thoughtful about. And I think in order to be successful, unless you want to make a lot of stuff and have it at your own house, in my case, I do sculptural work, and there's only so many things I can keep around the house, and I can't give it away either, really, because I can give away a bowl or a mug or something because everybody can use one. But for sculpture thing, for artistic kind of work, like some of your bigger work, it's hard to give that away because it's now picked up by people as a piece of art as opposed to something functional. No, it's cool. It's cool. I was recently in New York, and we just lucked on to an art show. I don't even know what it was called, but they had opened up all the garment district buildings and turned them into art studios. So, as you know, these are what 15 story buildings, and then each floor they had turned into multiple studios. And so then they opened up all of those buildings across. This was in Manhattan, opened it up, and so we just lucked onto that, and were able to walk through and see all sorts of really high quality art and craft work. It was wonderful. So, hearing about your work in Brooklyn and the studio tours and whatnot that are doing that going on there, would be a great opportunity for potters and ceramic folks to come to Brooklyn when the art sale and studio shows on. When are the, is it a standard time every year that it's on?
It's usually, well, it was before Memorial Day weekend, and then now it's after Memorial Day weekend. We found that it works a little better after Memorial Day. Definitely not on Memorial Day weekend, because a lot of people are away. But yeah, it's an event that is sponsored the sponsored by different ceramic supply companies, and there are two founders of the Brooklyn Ceramic Arts Tour. It was something that happened prior to COVID, and COVID kind of smashed it. And we tried doing little iterations of it online, but that wasn't really that effective. So we picked it back up after COVID,
Nice.
and I'm one of the organizers of one of the events. We have a lot of people. Well, there's a lot of studios. There's been an explosion of studios opening in Brooklyn.
Here too. Here too.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The one thing that I am doing is I am leaving Brooklyn.
Yeah, where are you going?
Yeah, I'm staying in New York. I'm moving upstate New York into Rochester. I probably will be closer to you.
Yeah. Well, sort of. I'm way out on the west end of Canada,
Oh,
kind of
okay.
north of Montana might be a better way of
Oh,
thinking
wow.
about it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a little further
Yeah,
than
a
where I'm
little
going.
further, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, do you have a website for your ceramic tour?
It's the website. The website is brooklynceramicartstour.com.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll put
And
that in the
mine is on my website. It's called Go Brooklyn. I'm in the Gowanus neighborhood. So GO is short for Gowanus, and then dash Brooklyn.
Very nice.
You can see it there. Yeah, there's just it's a big event.
Yeah.
There's days of events like musical instruments being made and played in one venue made with clay. There's one called Creature Comforts that's all like little creatures made in clay in a gallery not far away. So there's all different types of events. There's the closing party is a pottery throwdown. That is like really high energy. We're having a for the first time a big cup sale fundraiser at the same place. And then we have in between before this event happens, we have little meet and greet kind of potluck meetings of the organizers and participants. And we had one here in my studio. And so what I decided to do was I would make two vases, and everybody that attended gets to decorate those two vases.
Wow.
And then I did like a little vinyl wording on different areas of the vases saying it's called BCAT, Brooklyn Ceramic Arts Tour, but BCAT 2025,
Nice.
Woodfire, slip casting, all the little words in the clay words, and then just kind of clear coat glaze on top, and we're raffling those two vases off
Nice.
during this whole weekend. So to make money, to make to help fund 2026. Yeah.
Kyle, you sound like you are a classic potter. You make great pots. You're engaged with different kinds of business communities, galleries, markets. You teach. You love connecting with other people
I
and
do.
teaching students. And here you are, essentially running a studio tour in Brooklyn. So you are the epitome of a classic potter. So thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, me too. Thanks so much.
All right, take care.